if you think we're on the run.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Dad's Army podcast. Very, very brief introduction this time around, purely because I am so short on time at the moment, I'm afraid. So what you've got coming up over the next half an hour is a commentary that Oliver and I recorded on War Dance a little time ago now. Now, this is one of my favourite episodes of Dad's Army, the reasons you'll hear in a little bit more depth during the commentary itself. Next podcast, number 51, will feature all of the coverage and all of the recordings that I made at this year's Dad's Army weekend in Thetford. And that was, it was some time ago now as I'm recording this. It was nearly a month or so ago. And you'll be pleased to know I got interviews with Jimmy Perry, Michael Knowles and Harold Snowd and a few others as well. So we'll be back with the August podcast and Oliver and I will go through those recordings. We'll also go through a little bit of Dad's Army news, including one very interesting story about someone using a live grenade as part of a Dad's Army play. Could be a little bit too convenient for me, I think. Could have been a publicity stunt. Who knows? Anyway, the commentary is on its way, so usual thing applies. In a moment you'll hear some music, then you'll hear a countdown, and when you hear the word play, press play on your DVD recorder or on your computer, depending on how it is you're going to be watching the episode. So sit back and enjoy our commentary on War Dance. Three, two, one, play. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dad's Army podcast with no number, quite deliberately, because I've no idea when this is going to go online.
He loves it.
This is a commentary on War Dance. I'm joined once again by Oliver.
Oh yes, hello.
For another half an hour of informative, interesting banter about Dad's Army. So, War Dance then, this is a Season 3 episode. I believe it was the 9th episode in this particular run. He says, hastily looking at his reference manual here, where we are, War Dance, yes.
Which is available from all Dad's Army Appreciation Society websites.
Do you know, I don't think it is. One, because there's only one, and secondly, because it's out of print.
Is it really? Yeah,
the Dad's Army A Companion, I was given by Paul Carpenter at the Vicar and Chips evening, and it was the last edition never that he had, yes.
Anyway,
now that set some kind of record, I think, for us going off at a tangent.
Yeah,
already.
It took 2 seconds. Well, let's get onto a tangent. We've got a now. Now I was only watching one the other day, remarking, well, that the bank's office is one of the most consistent sets. But then when I look at it here, it obviously is very different to the later episodes. I mean, but obviously the layout of it is, but the walls are cream, are they not, in later episodes?
I don't remember. I do remember the office changing several times, so I think you're right. So yeah. It's certainly not consistent.
No.
But then again, looking at consistency, when else do you remember John Le Mesurier wearing glasses as Wilson?
Good shout. I mean, did the series have a constant designer, or were different ones? I've been presumably BBC staff, you know, going and going on different things.
I think it wasn't such a structured set of roles that early on, and you didn't necessarily, apart from a couple of notable exceptions, have consistent crew.
No.
And so I'm really not too sure, and I don't know whether or not continuity was really paid that much attention.
And of course, this series will have followed from the two black and white ones, and in the early days they'll have painted the sets that work for black and white, so cream walls would have been totally pointless because we wouldn't have known they were cream walls. So,
well, this is one of the biggest questions throughout Dad's Army. Are they whites or are they cream?
Yeah.
Which episode is that
gray
from? Can you remember which episode that's from?
White of the cream, that's one of the knickers.
Yes, yes. Manhunt, I think it is.
Yes.
Let's talk about the broadcasting figures then. I mean, you can't really read too much into the viewing statistics, I think, by today's standards anyway. But 12.6 million viewers, which we would immediately think of, wow, fantastic, wonderful.
Yeah.
Which, of course, it is in a multi-channel kind of
TV society that we're in 2010. But back when there were just a couple of channels, you'd have thought that's probably quite a good statistic anyway, wouldn't you?
Oh, I would have easily said so. I mean, yeah, but definitely.
I'm just trying to see what time it broadcast. Yes, it was Thursday at 7:30. Is that not EastEnders territory these days?
Yeah.
So
which wouldn't dream of getting 12 and a half.
Well, not now.
Not now. I mean, in your Leslie Christmas. Grantham days, you know.
I think that probably shows how much regard or how high a regard Dad's Army was held in back then for primetime viewing midweek. So, anyway, Pike singing, Ian Lavender singing. you get that in quite a few episodes, actually. I can't remember the actual names or specific scenes now, but he is known for having a little bit of a sing now and again.
I think they probably realised with Ian, as he developed and as the character of Pike developed, they had a very talented man in their cast, and to make more of him, and I think he said in a recent interview that he only had about two lines per episode in the first couple of series, you know, they obviously realised that he... Oh, I love that. Both from Western Supermare.
I know we're going back to the episode, so it's a tangent to our tangent, but it is what we're supposed to be talking about, I suppose. The whole episode is focused on the relationship between Wilson and Pike. And this is, as far as I'm aware, is the only real time Mannering addresses it head on and directly with Wilson. He sits there and says, well, look, tongues wag, people are talking about the fact he could be your son. And I think John Lemesra's portrayal is genuinely that of shock.
Yeah, I think so. In very realistic, if someone was to say to you or I, well, I think that chap over there is your son. You know, we've all been talking about it. This is a nice scene. Look, very, you know, everyone in their normal dress.
In their civvies.
Yeah, in their civvies.
I like these scenes. This is the only slight difference to normal is that this is being held in the office as opposed to being held within the main hall. You know, this is basically a committee scene, isn't it?
It is, and it's just different from a platoon lineup scene. Mm. They thought, okay, let's just have it a bit more personal.
Mm. And again, this is all a setup. I mean, I mentioned a little while ago, the main cut and thrust of this episode is all about the relationship that Pike has with Wilson. And the dance that's being organised now that we see is to have an environment in which to address that particular issue. Because Pike wants to go and get married to Ivy Samways or somebody. Oh,
yeah, someone
like that. And of course, that in itself sets up Mannering to be able to have a go at Wilson about his alleged parental responsibilities. And I think it's a great way because, you know, you get Mannering belliger and berate Wilson continually, but very rarely does he get to Wilson.
Yeah, quite right. It's just so vague. It's like this impenetrable armour.
Mm.
What's nice looking at it here is, I mean, it's series three, I know, which is an achievement for any sitcom, but the cast are so much more defined in this series than they were in the first two episodes. Yeah. And this episode could be from any of the series 3 to 9, in my opinion. The relationship, well, obviously, with the exception of course, Jimmy Becker's in it, but the characters, they finally found that comfortable formula that we all now know and love. In the early episodes, they're still finding their feet, whereas this here is a very nice scene. You know, all the characters are well defined by this point.
Yeah. And there's certainly quite well-rounded, and I think you can tell the confidence of the writers coming through the actors' performances. And again, I think everyone here seems to be quite committed. Mannering is still quite enthusiastic, and I think Mannering's enthusiasm levels are directly linked to that of Arthur Lowe's, and towards the end of Dad's Army, you can see him becoming much more
tired.
Tired and two-dimensional character.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you do get moments of buffoonery with Mannering, like it or not. I know generally he's much more rounded and much more dimensional, but usually when Arthur Lowe is on top of his game, he gives his best performances.
Totally.
And that's why you look in the first two series, I think he's a strong performer continually.
Very much so.
And he isn't so much later on. But yeah, I like this scene, sitting
it's,
in the
it's
office.
It's nice hearing the mention of the marigold tea rooms. That's what is great, that the continuity with these little tiny little references here and there are very consistent, whether it's, you know, where the platoon march or, you know, the marigold tea rooms. Timothy White.
Yes, indeed. I think there's just a splendid collection of words. Like novelty rocking porridge. Jolly Roger Peer. I just like those. And those are the things, like marigold tea rooms, that are referred to time and time again. And again, each of those settings eventually make an on-screen appearance as well. Which is really good. Wonderful line. Again, you got these two pictures facing each other. It looks like they've had an argument.
And
it's quite rare that you get a gag within the first line of a scene without any other characters. Boom. Brilliant. Yeah. Really, really very good. And seeing the church hall in a state of dress as well, if you know, in a kind of, I think that's the correct terminology, state of dress.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Again, it's just good with Walker sitting in the background there.
Yeah, they're all busy.
Yep.
Very, very well shot and directed in terms of everyone. You can always say that of this series, everyone's always busy and they're always performing. You're never looking at even the back row of a platoon. They're always reacting to everything that's being said.
Yes.
Real cast of pros. We're very lucky.
Indeed. There's someone just behind Wilson there. And I think
it's Godfrey, is it?
Is it Godfrey?
Yeah. Godfrey having a little polish.
Ah, right. There you go. That's even more detail once again.
Yeah.
So really, really very good. I think there are a limited number of episodes where we see the characters in civvies throughout. I'm not sure whether this is one of them, but I know there were a couple of early ones. Something Nasty in a Vault there.
Yes.
Always in civvies as well. And that goes back again to the first couple of episodes. I mean, look at Fraser there in that hat. Yes. But that hat is a legacy from series 1 and 2.
Ah, yes, of course.
And I'd completely forgotten why he was hobbling there.
Why is he doing that?
I'm sure it was for a joke, but I don't think he hobbles for the remainder of the...
of the episode?
No, not at all.
Oh, this is a wonderful scene, isn't it? This is John LeMessurier at his best. Just so awkward, but at the same time, this amazing kindness that he wants to get it right.
Yeah.
But it's a very lovely scene.
I think it's countered nicely by Lavender's awkwardness.
Yeah.
But this mannerisms with the ear.
With the ear.
Yeah. Been used, again, I think this was the first time it was used, but we saw that in later episodes as well.
Yeah.
Where they've got similar mannerisms. But aside from those mannerisms, Pike and Wilson are not particularly... they're not particularly similar, are they?
Not physically, no. At least they're both reasonably tall. Which starts...
I just find it interesting.
But, I mean, then again, I mean, arguably, Ian does look facially similar to Janet Davies, and you could believe that it's like me, I look more like my mum than I do my dad. So you could have that sort of I'm sure everyone does that thing of people not looking entirely like their mum and dad.
I wonder if that's what they had going. I wonder whether or not they had any kind of, or whether any kind of thought was given to that when they cast.
Yeah, how early they planned that this relationship would exist.
All of the interviews you hear these days, they all say, well, of course he was. I believe that. I think by the end of the series, without a shadow of a doubt, Wilson was Pike's father. But I wonder how soon they knew. I mean, did they know in this episode, for instance, where they were addressing the subject head on, had they decided that, yeah, this was the case and it was just never referred to directly?
I think by this point, to have it as such a running theme, I think, yeah. But in terms of casting, I don't know. I mean, it's so early to say. The character of Pike was so much, in fairness, a bit of a background character at the beginning.
Yeah, he was.
Became... I think in terms of growth, and quite rightly, as soon as he's the character who develops as he gets older, that the character should develop and grow throughout the series. But I mean, Frank was only remarking the other day, if you get one, Ian went grey by the time he finished. I mean, his regular gag was on the oldest 17-year-old in the business, oh, you goodness. Know, because he was in his early 30s by the time it finished. It's only right, really, I mean, that his character developed, because you couldn't have had that sort of, that, you know, situation with a guy playing a youngster and not have him try and develop. But this is a wonderful thing. A very recognisable thing of a, you know, a father figure talking to a son about girls for the first time.
Well, and it's quite a long scene as well for Dad's Army, and it does, although there are comedic lines, it does have a dramatic overtone, really, and it feels like that, you know, it's a character piece as opposed to a series of gags.
Yes.
And
yes.
The real comedy here is in the sheer awkwardness that both characters are able to display. And what I don't understand so much is why the character of Wilson would actually listen to Mannerin. You know, it's Mannerin's suggestion. excuse me. It's Mannerin's suggestion that Wilson speaks to Pike in a parental way, and rather than just telling him to mind his own business, he does it.
Yeah, it's a very good point, Matt. Because, oh, look how quick that scene was in comparison. Boom, boom, boom. Well, in a way, whilst he could say that, as Wilson is an awkward character, he still is boss. And I don't know how much he genuinely respects Mannerin. He does later say, of course, that I genuinely admire what you've done with the platoon. So there is clearly some kind of friendship there. That's obvious. But also, how many other characters do we see Wilson have a heart-to-heart with in the series? I mean, when we have Fraser with the revelation that Wilson has a daughter.
Yeah.
But that's only because Fraser happens to be there. Wilson's quite a private character. And so suddenly he's in this situation where, you know what, you could do something about this. Tongues are beginning to wag. And I think he thinks, well, yeah, maybe I better had do something about it. But I imagine that Mannerin would have that effect on anyone. He has the respect from Godfrey. Yes. You know, whatever Mannerin says, Godfrey would listen to. Oh, here he is. What a legend.
I think it was interesting, the scene that we've just missed. You had another one-to-one between John Lemez and James Burke. And again, talking about Pike again. So I didn't realise, I mean, we're about halfway through this episode now, but I didn't realise prior to watching it again, or sitting down to watch it again, how Wilson-orientated it is. And maybe this is more about Wilson than it is about Pike, because yes. Wilson does feature in most scenes. I know he's not in this particular scene now, that we'll talk about again, because obviously this is one of Frank Williams' early appearances.
Yes, it is, yeah, yeah.
We're 9 episodes into series 3 now, so I don't think he's been in every single episode.
No, not sure.
Of this series. And I still think Frank has got a very different way about him in the early episodes. And I have mentioned it to him, and he doesn't recall whether this is the case or not. But in this particular episode, I think he inclines his head a lot more, and he smiles a lot more.
Yeah.
Right? So when he walks around, and of course you can't see this when you're listening to this, but he's like that, he's stooping his head a little
bowing
bit.
Bowing his head.
It's almost the classic vicar stance.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, very accommodating and friendly. And as they went on, the vicar did get more irascible. Oh, look at that.
I know.
Great piece of makeup.
Mannerin's black eye. Do you know, it's interesting, and I'm glad you pointed this bit out, actually, because I really wanted to talk to you about this. Now, what we're seeing here, right, unless I'm looking at this very, very cynically...
That's not it, like you.
Well, perhaps it is, just a little bit. We're looking at a comedic take on domestic violence.
Yes, we are. Quite right.
Is that still in place? Does that have a place in today's comedy, in today's television?
A good question. Within comedy... I don't know. Comedy's changed. I think generally a character whom, like Mannerin, has this position of authority, who can be belittled in a physical manner, such as walking around with a black eye. I think that's always going to be funny. I mean, you know, Basil Fawlty having a deer drop on his head, you know, yes. And walking around with a bandage. That's always going to be funny. So Mannering getting a black eye from his wife, whom we haven't seen. Yeah, that's going to be funny too.
I mean, it is. Don't get me wrong. I do think it is funny when he turns around. And yeah, the way it's shot, you don't see his black eye until he does actually turn around.
Yes.
And,
in terms of today's comedy,
yeah,
a bit, you know, I'm sure at this time. Well, no, it's a very good point.
I think it's unacceptable today. Mm. I think it's unacceptable, and this is. I mean, there's another episode that I'm sure we'll talk about. Actually, referred to it earlier on, Manhunt.
Yeah,
where they go from door to door trying to find Walker's parachute knickers.
Yeah,
and you actually hear domestic violence done the other way around because there's an audible. Noise made that implies a husband has hit his wife.
Well, you know what? I find, oddly enough, I find that I find Mrs. Mannering hitting Mannering more acceptable than in my British buddy than the American captain punching Captain Mannering in the photo stuff of the newspaper.
Yes.
For some reason, I find Mrs. Mannering punching Mannering funnier than that because that is more. Awkward and you don't want your in that situation Mannering's your hero because the American captain is such a bigot and doesn't come across at all well. Look at Arnold here, how grand.
Yes, getting back onto lighter things there. So I did want to ask you, that was the only question you might be interested to know that I had planned to ask you about this episode. With Godfrey looking like a conjurer or a magician of some kind.
And this is Nan Braunton who did 4 episodes. This is Sissy, isn't it? Sissy Godfrey. Dolly Godfrey had only appeared in 1 and then was later recast with Joan Cooper, Arthur's wife.
Yeah.
This is Blodwyn.
Now, where does this Blodwyn come from? He does say, doesn't he, I think. Oh, I'm not too sure. I can't remember. Anyway, Fraser
is his niece,
that was it, of course. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Miss Blodwyn.
Yes, so Uncle James. So he has a brother or a sister or something as well.
Bless her, she gets her cue wrong. She oversteps Arthur's line,
and it's so obvious.
Yeah,
it's
and they so don't obvious. Quite cover it up well enough. But no. That must be an awful feeling in front of a live show. But
especially with such a small part and so few lines.
Yes, yes.
yes, that is a bit unfortunate. It has to be said, but. I like these scenes. I know we've seen Janet Davis, and we've just spent some time talking about her for a previous podcast that would have already been transmitted by now. But I like these kind of scenes where you've got everybody together, the dances, the committees, the bazaars, the, you know, I just, these are much more about the characters.
Totally, and it's nice seeing, you know, characters from the back row appearing in nice dress with their wives, you know. Desmond Cullum Jones in the far left of the screen as you look now. You know, the fact that they rated the characters enough to say, well, yeah, you're going to go to this do, and you're watching. And Hugh Hastings, as Private Hastings, gets to play the piano in this. It was nice, because I mean, all the guys playing the back row were pros, weren't they? I mean,
they've done
years of professional dancing or singing or acting on stage and screen. Mm. So, you know, these guys weren't just extras, they were pros. And so it's nice that, particularly in Hugh Hastings' case in this episode, they got to show off their talents. Colin Bean, obviously, rising the most prolifically in the back row.
I think we'll have to spend at least some time in future talking about the back row. We'll have to have a segment on it, because we've referred to it many times in other commentaries. And not actually gone into any great detail.
Now, how do you feel? How does Jones fare in this particular sequence, James?
I think he's really good, with the exception of all the banging on the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, the character of Jones is not an idiot.
No.
He's not been written as an idiot. So why, therefore, show him as an idiot for a couple of moments? For pure comedic effect, I don't think it's good enough. They make the other characters genuine. rounded, believable, and deliver comic and funny lines. In the same way, I mean, they pass it off with Manon so much better.
Yeah.
And it's not a reflection on Clive Dunn, because no, I do think he's an extremely good actor, and I like him throughout Dad's Army. But in that particular scene, the question you asked me, no, I don't like him on the microphone. Is this working? Is this working? And he does it again later.
Yeah.
I thought the DVD had stopped there for a bit, but it wasn't. It was one of the very look few blackouts.
Teddy Sinclair had a very unique look and a unique acting style. You know, he was the Virgibo. You know, you can't take anything away.
Do you know, I'd like to have seen more scenes with him and Olive Mercer together.
Yeah.
Because they're very funny.
What goes on behind when they leave the village hall, you know.
Exactly. Now, of course, these two, Walker's girlfriends, Dora and who was the other one? Dora and... I can't remember now. Doris? Yeah, Doris and Dora. Were real-life twins as well. They were credited as the Graham twins.
Okay.
So, interesting as to why they decided that was actually necessary. Why did Walker need to bring along two women?
Well, he's a legend, isn't he? I mean, you know, if you're going to go along to this kind of do, and you want to show him how it's done, bring twins, you know. He was a man of that town.
I suppose so. I think he takes him down to the crypt later on as well.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah. But there you are. Now this is good.
Look at that, fantastic.
You've got the absolute statuesque Mr. and Mrs. Verger. But Clive Dunn, of course, was known for his singing and his other talents as well. And one of the very few times they've used it.
And impersonations of wireless personalities. This is something they adapted for the stage show later on.
Do you know any of it? I've heard of Arthur Askey, but I don't know whether this is a good impression or not. Do you?
I only know from the Fast Show when they did a spin-off with Arthur Atkinson.
Right, okay.
From Arthur Askey. Frank... Frank.
Oh, that's Frank looking
Frank
a little
doing
bit
some
more
heavy
annoyed.
Blinking, yeah. A very familiar vicar pose. Little girl.
As I said, this is kind of lost on me. It's a little bit over my head. And I suppose there's a few things in Dad's Army, and it's kind of nice knowing that there's some things left open for me to go and investigate, and things like the film references, song titles, contemporary comedians, and so on. Fantastic. Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to look at.
With Ian Lavender gazing into that girl's eyes, and she's just chewing a gum. Yes. I think, in fairness, every young lad's had that, whether it's school discos or anything. I think that's why youngsters, we read an email not long ago from a listener whose son watches Dad's Army now, and Pike is his favourite character. Pike is the character that the youngsters relate to, which I think is often overlooked. And that's something certainly I can relate to, you know, gazing into some girl's eyes, you're clearly not bothered at all. Like, you're there, you know, let alone taking in anything that's going on.
I don't think I've ever gazed into some girl's eyes quite like that.
not like that.
Not where he's not blinked. But and also, it wasn't Ivy Samways, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was another girl's name.
It came up on the subtitles a little while ago, and I realised I made a mistake then, but I can't remember who it is now.
Do Freddie Bartholomew, Shirley Temple. Oh, here we go. Doesn't it begin with Edith someone?
Edith? No, Edith Parrish as Wendy Richards' character.
It was.
Who was it? That's very, very irritating. I can't remember. Never mind. And it's not listed in the book that Dad's Army Appreciation Society gave me either, so
that's why it's out of print.
Oh, I'll have to go for Wikipedia in future, I think. But
this is a good scene.
One of my favourite scenes in all Dad's Army.
Arthur Loder's drunk all acting, Dad's Army. Better than any comedian I've ever seen.
Do you know, it's not just the drunk acting that I like. It's the camaraderie. There's a similar scene in A Soldier's Farewell, where they all have their, you know, cheese and...
Yeah, that's a brilliant...
Bottles of ale.
Well, I love the fact that, you know, Mannering doesn't mind that Wilson's in his chair.
He couldn't care less.
These are just two friends. Two guys in the same boat. Three guys in the same boat, you know, of different ages here. This is a wonderful moment. It's fantastic. I And this is what's brilliant about Dad's Army. You have your... Arguably, it can be formulaic, and you get all the slapstick and things fine. It's moments like this. That's why we love this show.
And with Pike, or Ian Lavender, drenched as he is there, doesn't he look young? Doesn't he look different?
Without the old-fashioned, slick hairstyle.
No, but you're quite right. It's these little scenes that are absolute magic. And in a moment, I think Arthur Lowe starts laughing about something, and you very rarely see.
No, it's a joy to see.
Yeah.
Does he make a joke about something? Or...
I think it's this one, the Verger's dress or something, Coles for Newcastle, which I never quite understand personally. There you go.
No, yeah, that's lovely, isn't it?
Why shoving coal down... Oh, I don't understand.
No.
And of course, why are they all drunk? They're all drunk because of Godfrey's potato wine or something?
Yeah.
I can't remember now.
Godfrey was a dark horse. There was a lot going on in that cottage we'll never know about.
Well, I think I've confused episodes there, actually, but I can't remember why. But they clearly all say it was a good dance, despite the fact they've all ended up in the office where none of them intended to end up in the office at the end of the episode.
That's very relevant. Well, that's timeless, isn't it? I mean, parties don't go right. Things do go wrong.
Mm. And what a fantastic way to end it. Again, it wasn't really on a gag.
No, quite it's, right. That scene could have carried on for hours and hours, they'll still be very drinking
I
away.
I wish they had carried on for longer sometimes, those scenes, because those are the scenes that really, really impress me and really interest me. It's just that I want to see what the actors or what the characters are actually like.
Wouldn't it have been great to have had all seven of them coming in and chipping in and having that sort of one-on-one, but all together in a group and all talking about things?
I guess they don't do that because it must be quite difficult to get the intimacy.
Yes, well,
of course. Yeah.
Right, but you're right, they do it occasionally with parts of the cast. But anyway, that's the end of War Dance. Once again, it's gone really very quickly, hasn't it?
A solid episode, and hope you've enjoyed us rambling on about it.
Bye for now.
Bye.